Well, after the Exodus from Egypt on Mount Sinai, God entered into a relationship with the nation of Israel. And here in chapter 2, that relationship is presented like a marriage. God is the husband, Israel is the wife. Israel was a holy nation, distinct from any other nation, because she was God's covenant people. She was set apart by God. It was, in a sense, like a marriage. This covenant, this marriage, bound God to his people and his people to him. But unfortunately, this marriage has broken down. Verse 2, she is not my wife, and I am not her husband. This wife has, verse 5, gone after her lovers to provide her with food, water, wool, linen, olive oil, and drink. Israel had forgotten all that God had done for her in the past. She had forgotten her identity. She was no longer living as God's wife. The nation of Israel had crossed the river Jordan, into a land flowing with milk and honey. Yet no sooner had they entered the promised land than they started worshipping other gods, notably Baal, a fertility god, who they thought would ensure that the harvest would be good and so provide all their needs. God had provided bread in the wilderness, but Baal could provide flowing fields of corn. But I must turn to chapter 3, verse 1 at this point, where God is also making the point that Israel had turned to other gods. But then that is illustrated by the fact that they loved the sacred raisin cakes. Well, no doubt that would have been clear to them at the time. But from where we sit, this comes across as a bit strange, almost humorous. Choosing raisin cakes over God sounds downright foolish. One writer wonders if we would choose which church to go to purely based on the quality of the after-service refreshments. But it may be that in our lives there are silly, inconsequential things that we choose over God. Maybe our raisin cakes are things like success, popularity, money, relationships, education, among many others. And what is ridiculous is to forget that any blessings we do receive come from God. God says in verse 8, she has not acknowledged that I was the one who gave her the grain, the new wine and oil, who lavished on her the silver and gold, which they used for Baal. The people had thought that their blessings had come from Baal. In verse 12, we see that they assumed that their pay, their successes, had come from their lovers, when actually it was God who had given them all their blessings. They didn't think that the Lord was sustaining them and caring for them. They thought that their idols were caring for them. They ran to these other gods because they didn't understand that God was behind their prosperity and blessings. And we so easily do the same thing. We think that it is our career that gave us our wealth, so we give ourselves to our career. We want more money, so we work harder. Yet we fail to realize that God gave us the wealth and the possessions we have. God gave us the job we have, the money we have. He gave us the ability to think and to work. But we often don't see it that way. God did give us our family, our home, our car, our job, our wealth, and anything else we can think of. But we fail to seek the one who gave us all this, and we go after other stuff instead. Indeed, if Israel thought that God would be best for getting more stuff, then she would worship God. Back to verse 7, she will chase after her lovers, but not catch them. She will look for them, but not find them. Then she will say, I will go back to my husband. But she doesn't want God, she just wants his stuff. She doesn't love God, she loves herself more. And so what is God's response to all this? In verse 6 he says, I will block. Verse 9, I will take away, I will take back. Verse 10, I will expose. Verse 11, I will stop. Verse 12, I will ruin. Verse 13, I will punish. God pursues his bride by withdrawing his blessings. As strange as it may seem, God sometimes blesses us by removing his blessings. He prevents us finding satisfaction in other lovers. He wants us to bring us to our senses. God needs to wake us up. God will show his people the futility of what they're pursuing. He will let them go in that direction, but it's going to be an empty pursuit. God will take back all of his blessings so that they will see the emptiness of their ways. Verse 7 again, she will chase after her lovers but not catch them. She will look for them but not find them. Our failure to find lasting joy and satisfaction is to turn our eyes back to God and understand that he is the one who gives us everything. God is doing us a favor by not letting us get to what we think will bring us joy. He will put an end to the prosperity of Israel and punish them for their sins. Verse 13, I will punish her for the day she burned incense to the Baals. She decked herself with rings and jewelry and went after her lovers, but me she forgot. Israel would be punished because she went after her lovers and forgot the Lord. And forgetting God can lead to an empty life. So I wonder, do you believe in the idea of tough love? Back to the video. Not that video, another video.
Thank you.
happy days. Tough love. Is it all about spare the rod, spoil the child? You've got to be cruel to be kind. Or is it more about knowing what's best for someone, even when it's not what they want? Setting boundaries with compassion. God loves us too much to let us stay as we are. Sometimes he needs to teach us a lesson that may not be comfortable at the time. Verse 6, therefore I will block her path with thorn bushes. I will wall her in so that she cannot find her way. Here is a divine restraint that will make it harder for them to pursue the course that they had planned. A Christian writer makes this point. When I was counseling a woman whose husband was involved in an adulterous affair, I thought to myself, would it be right to ask God to put a hedge of thorns around this man so that his sinful pursuits would become more difficult? I decided it would, and after sharing my thinking with the woman concerned, we prayed and asked God to do just that. And we heard a few weeks later that the other woman had lost interest in him, and he returned to his wife, demoralized, chastened, and repentant. I have prayed that prayer with many people since and seen some amazing results. God has warned the people that there are consequences for choosing to continue their unfaithfulness. Verse 3, I will strip her naked and make her as bare as on the day she was born. I will make her like a desert, turn her into a parched land, and slay her with thirst. God will strip Israel naked and make her like a wilderness and a parched land. God will cause the people to experience destitution. The blessings of God are going to be removed. He will not show love to them because they are unfaithful. But beyond that judgment lies the prospect of the forgiveness of God. Verse 14. Therefore I am now going to allure her. I will lead her into the wilderness and speak tenderly to her. God needs to get our attention. But he does not shout at us, but speaks tenderly to us. It's as if he's saying, can't you see that you're not only hurting me, but hurting yourself by the way you've been living? Will you not stop and consider that the way I plan for you to live is the way that is best for you? You were made for happiness, but true happiness can only be found in me. The wilderness is the place to start over. God is saying he's going to hit the reset button. The wilderness represents that time when the covenant and the marriage began, the time when they were set free from the Egyptians and on the brink of inheriting God's promises. God will bring his people back to the wilderness, setting them free from their slavery. Verse 15, there I will give her back her vineyards. I will make the valley of Achor a door of hope. There she will respond as in the days of her youth, as in the day she came up out of Egypt. This valley of Achor, Achor means trouble. It was a place of death and a reminder of their rebellion. A man, Achan, had kept some of the spoils of victory after the defeat of Jericho. And that had been forbidden to do that. And God judged Israel by allowing them to be defeated by a much smaller city in the valley of Achor. But God is going to take the place of rebellion and death and make it a place of hope, he says. One writer puts it, God is going to cause such a staggering reversal that Israel will be reset and renewed as when she came out of Egypt. The people are going to respond to God again, like in the beginning. God is going to allure his people back to him because death will be turned to life. judgment will be turned to hope. Who can turn that valley of Achor into a door of hope? We can't. Only God can take the place of death and turn it into a place of hope. Only God can take a cross, the instrument of death for Jesus, and make it into an icon of hope. God can take Golgotha, the place of the skull, and turn it into a place of redemption. Verse 16, in that day, declares the Lord, you will call me husband. You will no longer call me my master. God will renew that marriage covenant. Baal means master. And other translations have this verse as, you will no longer call me my Baal. Instead, the people will call God my husband. A much more intimate and affectionate relationship. The people are going to have a greater love for God that is so strong that they will not want what the world is offering. And in verse 18 we read, all may lie down in safety. This is a picture of rest, and this marriage will last. Verse 19, I will betroth you to me forever. I will betroth you in righteousness and justice, in love and compassion. I will betroth you in faithfulness, and you will acknowledge the Lord. This is a picture that is opposite to where we started. The people will now depend on the Lord, and the Lord will be there to care for them and give them safety. God will show steadfast love towards us, even though we've shown him wavering love. God will show us mercy, though we do not deserve mercy. God says that he will return us into his marriage covenant, and he will be faithful to us, even though we've been unfaithful to him. God is going to turn everything upside down. When his love and grace are clearly seen, then all that Baal offered will appear cheap and tawdry. He's going to reverse what has gone before. Do you remember last week about the names that Hosea gave to his children? Jezreel, which means God plants. Lo Ruama, which means not loved. And Lo Ami, not my people. Well, look what happens now. Verse 22. And the earth will respond to the grain, the new wine and the olive oil, and they will respond to Jezreel. I will plant her for myself in the land. I will show my love to the one I called, not my loved. I will say to those called, not my people, you are my people. And they will say, you are my God. So a complete change around. And now, in verse 3, once again, Hosea will act out this story in his relationship with his wife, Gomer. The Lord said to me, go, show your love to your wife again, though she is loved by another man and is an adulteress. Love her as the Lord loves the Israelites. So Hosea enacts God's love. He loves her. He redeems her in verse 2. And restores her, verse 3. And then verse 4. For the Israelites will live for many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred stones, without ephod or household gods. But afterwards the Israelites will return and seek the Lord their God and David their king. God will pour out his blessings on his people again. God will restore the relationship with his people. And that is a hope for us. God is alluring us with his great love for us. His love is to cause us to stop loving our idols, our desires, our worldly pursuits. His love shows us the emptiness of this life and the fullness of life with him. His love makes us forget the world and enjoy all the blessings that God has to offer us. Amen.